This week on the Uninteresting Car Show, we talk about
some car news,
interesting imports,
and some weird engines.
Stay tuned. Jag åkte ner till Stockholm och då fick jag se glänsande Porsche och BMW. Men jag har en kärra som är bättre än då, det är en Volvo 142. Hello, welcome to another episode. Hopefully you've just enjoyed our intro again, which people have been asking. It's a song called Volvo 142, which was sung by, like, these Swedish guys, I believe, and...
It was... I don't really know where it originated from, but the original recording is, like, really shoddy.
Yeah.
And it just seems like one guy that has spent, like, 10 minutes in FL Studio and, like... I mean, it's pretty hilarious, but, yeah.
This week, in our... sort of somewhat semi-quarantined life that we're meant to live, thank you to that, we're having some Ace Perry craft cider, which on the blurb it says, it's from California, it says, pure fruit juices give this cider its fresh fruity taste. Enjoy this exhilarating alternative to beer or wine. It's very sweet.
I don't know about exhilarating, but it is very fruity.
It's good. It tastes of, I mean, it's cider, but it's good.
Like
I like beer more than this, but, you know, because of the gluten issue.
It's different. If we've got any fans out there that are... have any fans at all, honestly. But if we have any fans out there that can connect us to the guy who wrote that Volvo 142 song, I would love to reach out to him and to just give him a little shout-out.
Yeah, it's a fantastic song. Probably like put a link to it in the description of this. And then on that, we've set up some social media. I mean, we've set up an Instagram. We'll start posting some stuff there, trying to get back on top of that. Again, like, weirdly, we do have to deal with a bunch of, like, we're both in, you know, college, so it's like all this changeover from, you know, in-person online classes, and weirdly that's actually kind of a lot we have to do on our end for that. But nonetheless, we're doing our best to keep this going, and honestly, we'll probably have more time. We'll see how it goes, but like to do other stuff. So then that being said, we're going to probably try here to start kind of uploading more content that isn't just this podcast. Maybe some like more sort of dicking around stuff and things like that. We'll probably be doing that on YouTube and probably bits on social media because that's the best sort of avenue for that and kind of video stuff we do. So we've got some ideas for that coming and we'll keep you updated on that. But anyway, we're gonna start with a new segment that we're going to call Car News. Because
it's
I know it's very creative. Maybe we'll come up with something. Well, what do they call it on like Top Gear? The news. So I think we're one-upping that.
Okay,
so fair enough.
It is more specific.
It is more specific. So
the uninteresting car news.
Just uninteresting news.
Uninteresting news.
There just like us going, well, you know, this could be good or it could not be. It's whatever. Doesn't really matter. But anyway, we've got. Well, you go first.
Okay, probably the most interesting news you're gonna hear. Is Ford looking to bring a car-based pickup truck to the U.S.? Oh, wow, okay. This was posted in 2018, but it says...
David.
it's hardly new, is it?
It's like 3 years old.
Well, it says it's going to come in 2022. Why would someone be posting in 2018 about something coming in 2022? Everyone's going to forget. But, okay, are they looking to bring a car-based pickup... Maybe... Well, it's new because it's going to be new here.
Yes,
whatever.
But the news is 2 years old.
Okay,
we'll come back to that.
All right.
But some proper new news. Oh my gosh. Volkswagen's coming out with a lot of these electric, they're called ID series. I'm not sure what they're going to be called in the States, but I know overseas, you know, it's like ID and then a number. So like the ID3, I believe, is their, I think I've showed you it, but the ID3 is this kind of like semi-futuristic looking hatch. It's electric. And basically it's being touted as it's probably going to slowly replace the Golf. So we'll see if there's like a name change in there. But I was looking at the specs of it, and it's, you get more options and stuff as standard. It's like a larger kind of car. It's about the same thing, but you know, you get more car, I guess you could say. It's all electric, and the starting price is way less than a Golf because it's cheaper to make, it's easier to make, and it's faster to make because there's no moving parts. I mean, there is, there's the motor and stuff like that, but the amount of like engineering they have to do, I guess, is so much less. Like, it's newer, it's cheaper, and it's like better. And it's, I forgot what that's called. There's a word for when something's all those things, but it's really impressive. I didn't realize that till like quite recently, but I don't know when that's going to show up in the US because that kind of stuff takes a long time. But
what was that, a Hyundai?
A Volkswagen.
Oh, wait, what the fuck?
Were you paying attention?
No.
Why do I bother?
The electric Volkswagen. Okay, yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's an ID. And then they're supposed to have some, like, van retro thing. We'll see if that comes to fruition. But that could be really cool. I just think it's a cool idea. And then they're doing some other stuff. Another random piece of news is apparently on the new Golf, the current one, the Mark 8, whatever the one that's coming out for the GTI, they went to Audi and they were like, hey, can we use a 5-cylinder? You know,
no.
And then Audi was just like, nah.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Because even the
bring back the 5-cylinders,
it'd be really cool. Well, Audi has it, but they have it in 2 cars. But it's Audi's, even though it's Volkswagen Auto Group. I guess they're sectioned off where Audi can just go and kind of go, no, we don't really want to do that. And
that's cold.
It was supposed to go in the R or something, which I mean, it'll still be a really quick car. But that's pretty cool. I do wish, I don't know, someone will probably build that later on because it'll be like the old Golfs. Yeah. I don't know, I know some Golf history because I have one, I guess. But there were some really cool old 5-cylinders and VR5s and VR6s and stuff like that.
5-cylinders are kind of rare in terms of engine like configurations. But they're really cool because there it's like a little bit less than a 6. It's a little lighter, but it's making more power than a 4. So it's not like your average like commuter.
And they sound cool.
They sound really cool.
They sound like half a V10, which is what they are. But, you know, you don't normally see that. Like, my mom had a Volvo S60.
Yeah.
Like, turbo one. It was, like, a pretty fun car, but I didn't... Like, I was young. This is a while ago, but, you know, I'm, like, getting in the car. I'm like, why does it sound like that? It sounds kind of cool. Like, why do all Volvos sound like this? And then I was like, oh, it's a 5-cylinder. That's weird. But, well, now Volvo's doing their whole 4-cylinder, and then you can do that, and then you can put a turbo on it. And then if you want that, you can put a turbo and a supercharger on it, and then you can twin charge or twin turbo it or something like that. And then you want more, you can put an electric motor on it, and they have one engine for, like, their whole lineup, which is insane.
It's pretty crazy. I don't know. It's cool, but it's also kind of sad because they had 5-cylinders as well.
Yeah.
And they had straight 6s that they would put transversely. And it's kind of... They had a really neat, like, engine lineup, and now it's just, like, this one 4-cylinder, and that's it.
Yeah. And I didn't realize they did that whole modular thing. I mean, it's a different version of it because, you know, normally modular engines, it's like... Well, like Volvo, you get them 4, 5, or 6, and it's the same basic, you know, it's just adding a cylinder, adding half a liter, or whatever the displacement was. But then now it's the same thing, but instead of, like, you just have one block, and you just put more shit on it.
More stuff.
And then you go, make it faster, make it better. Those are cool, though. And then you put electric motors on it, make it better. And then speaking of electric stuff, Genesis, the new G80 is coming out soon, which is, that's the sort of... BMW flavor. It's like the sort of 5 series one, so it's like the bigger middle one.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, the G70, which is the baby one, the G80, and then the G90, which is their huge one that looks like a Maybach, which I really like. But it's supposed to look really cool, but they're doing like a super electrified version of that too.
Yeah.
And the BMW is apparently going to start really reducing the number of engine options and really trying to force stuff into electric. This is all really cool stuff. I want to see how this is going to go because I've only heard news of it. I don't know what the product's going to be like, but some of that stuff I think is going to be really, really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is coming off as controversial, but I think we both like really kind of like electric cars, or like the possibilities that they could bring up. And I mean, yeah, it's pretty sweet. And I think as soon as we get like more types of like electric vehicles, we'll finally get our like affordable electric sports car.
Yeah,
which will then probably become like my favorite car. But we'll see.
Yeah.
But who do you think would probably make that first? I'm thinking a Ford Mustang, electric Ford Mustang.
Well, they're supposed to come out with that. I mean, they've got the...
besides the Mach-E.
The Mach-E, which is like real controversial. We won't even get into that. It's like a Mustang, but not. But, like, I think that architecture, that underpinning, is the same as... It's similar or heavily related to the current Mustang and Explorer, which share a lot of underpinning stuff. So I think... I've heard a lot of things being said, like, oh, there will be an electric one, there will be a hybrid one. I've heard there's going to be, like, a four-door one, which would be good because, A, Ford axed all their sedans and stuff like that. Those are going away. But also, I think if you get a fast one, it could be, like, kind of like an American Ford version of, like, a Porsche Panamera kind of GT.
Yeah.
It depends on how nice they make it, but you could have that kind of a car, and that'd be really cool. That's, like... I don't know how that's going to come out because I don't know when the new Mustang's coming out, but the new F-150 is supposed to come out too soon-ish, next couple years.
Okay.
It looks, I think I saw some renders of it. It looks pretty good. The Bronco I'm excited about.
Yeah.
But of course, there's this virus, so everything's put on hold. So we'll see when we get it, but I do like it a lot. I like it a lot because it looks like the new Land Rover Defender, but it's like kind of smaller in a bit, and they have two versions of it.
I mean, the Bronco's pretty sweet. It was the only like... like sort of Jeep size like off-road vehicle besides a Jeep.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure I'm wrong about that. There's other ones, but like that's the main one I can think of. And I mean, I don't know. They're pretty neat.
Cuz GM had the Blazer, but now the Blazer, yeah. The new one, they've got the Blazer and the Trailblazer. They're just crossovers, you know, the front-wheel drive. I mean, I think one of them's actually pretty quick. Like it's got a fairly big V6 in it, but it's still not, it's not like a Bronco, not like a Wrangler, not like not like the old kind of Blazer was, like the K5, one of the really popular ones and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, trucks like that, we'll see what we get, because you said, okay, it's old news, but go back into it, the Ford Courier or whatever it was called.
I didn't read the date on this. I was just kind of browsing around, and I was like, oh, that sounds cool. So, I mean, they did it in 2018, this post came out, so maybe they're not doing it anymore? I really don't know. I hope they do, though. Bring a car-based pickup truck to the U.S. May revive the Courier nameplate. So I believe this Courier is made in Ford, Brazil, and perhaps some other places.
Yeah.
But they'd be bringing it to the U.S., and I think that'd be really cool, because there are, like, no Utes in the U.S.
Yeah, but no, there aren't that many in the U.S. Or, well, there aren't any. There are no more in the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
Because GM said they were going to bring back the Holden Ute before they kind of just, I think, stopped for, like, Australia, whatever.
Yeah.
But those were cool because they were, like, big rear-wheel drive. And there was a guy I remember a long time ago. I don't know if you can still buy him, but he was basically shipping the shells over in such a way that they were not built enough to be considered a car.
Yeah.
And then he would buy or get the engines and stuff from, like, the SS and the Pontiac G8 and then put it in there. And then sell it as a Pontiac G8 or Chevy SS, and that would be a new car, but it was a Ute.
See, I'm sure you'd pay like hella premium on that for all that work, but my God, that's very cool. That's a really cool thing to do.
That's something you don't see. And then, but like, I like stuff like that, because from Brazil, Brazil has a lot of stuff like that. Because I mentioned before, like in an earlier episode, I had a Volkswagen Fox, which was a two-door wagon. They had like a, it was the step below the Golf, basically the Polo, but for the U.S., because we don't get the Polo here. You see him running around. I think I told you, like, recently, like, you see him running around, like, I saw it was from Mexico, South America, but it was, like, a brand new little Polo driving around. I was like, cool, I wish we had those here, because I like them, you know, GTI and stuff like that, but I digress. But we had the Fox in, like, the 80s, and that thing was, you can get, like, a, you know, two-door coupe, four-door sedan, two-door wagon, stuff like that, but in Brazil, they had, you take that two-door wagon and you basically just cut the rear window out, and then it's a little truck, and it was called the Saveiro.
Yeah.
And I've seen a couple here. Like, I went to Walmart, I took a photo of one, I'll probably post it or something so you can see what I'm talking about, but it's literally like a baby version of my car, and it's a little two-door, I think basically, if it was calling it a truck, it'd be a single cab, but it has a bed on it, and it's really cool, and I really, really like them. And stuff like that kind of like makes me, I forget a lot of that stuff exists closer than, say, you know, going to Europe to get a car. But importing it theoretically should be easier because you don't have to ship it if you just go get it and stuff like that. But then that's a whole other thing. But
do you think, I'm thinking now, perhaps like car-based, like you small truck things could come back, because right now it feels like everybody's sort of backed out of like the really small truck market.
Yeah,
like, even small trucks now are like more what I consider like mid-sized trucks.
Yeah.
Like there's no like like the hard bodies, like the Nissan hard bodies, the D21. I feel like there's nothing like that size that much anymore. And it's like, this would be like a Ute, like a Courier, like this would be essentially like that again, but it's car based. And I think that'd be really popular, like in fleet sales, small business.
That's what I was going to say.
And just
like,
people who just want every once in a while to carry something in the back, but they don't want to spend all the gas for like a full size truck.
Yeah, exactly. And I realize there's like issues with, you know, importing it depending on where it's made because you pay a tax on it. I can't understand that kind of stuff. So if they could work that out, it'd be fine. But like, my father had Rangers all throughout the time that they were new, you know, from, he had, I think, two or three, and he just kept buying them because he liked them. And then they stopped making them in 2011. And then, you know, the new one just came out, and he's like, I don't want that, because he sold his old one because it was insanely high mileage and it started just not working. And he replaced the engine and he just did all this stuff. And he's like, I'm tired of dealing with it. So he eventually got rid of it. But he would have got another one, but they stopped making it. So then what he did is we pulled out this crappy old, like, Silverado. It was just sitting in our neighbor's yard, like, all overgrown. It had a cracked block. Put a new engine in it, stuff like that. And it worked enough. But the thing is, the new Ranger is, like, the size of that. I realize it's a 90 Silverado.
Yeah.
But my dad hates that. And then he did make a good point, and Like, I agree with him. It's like, you know, O'Reilly's needs little trucks to run around.
Exactly.
And you see him buying Nissan Frontiers, but that's kind of, like, more than they need.
Exactly.
And then they used to buy Rangers all the time because they were tiny, but they don't make them anymore, so they get wrecked, they get old, they get whatever. That doesn't matter. And I actually, when I worked at the Ford dealership in my hometown, like, a while ago, the owner of the dealership, because I didn't know that this was a thing, or I kind of forgot the Ranger stopped being produced.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there was a bunch of old, like, dead ones kind of on the side of the property.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pretty big dealership. And then all the parts trucks he would use to run between his dealerships and any other businesses were little Rangers that he, like, set up in a certain way.
Because
apparently what he did, because it's a Ford dealership and, you know, they can probably work it if they're buying it for, you know, get discounts, stuff like that. But because it's a big Ford dealership and all this stuff, he basically just bought as many Rangers as he could find, like in the certain, I think they've got like the 4-liter V6 or whatever you could get, maybe a 3, but you know, the bigger V6 with the automatic and like, you know, single cab or whatever with the longer bed, and he bought as many as he could find like in Texas or the US.
Yeah.
And I think he bought like 20 or 30 of them, and he had what he's still doing to this day, because you still see him if I ever go back, is he's basically just, as they die, he'll pull parts off the old ones and like throw them on there, or just keep going. And there was a truck that he wouldn't get rid of it because, you know, it's like he could use it for parts, so I get it. But I really wanted it, and it had like a metal stake bed. It was really kind of one of the odd ones of the dead trucks.
Mm-hmm.
It had 440,000 miles on it.
Jesus Christ.
Before it, I guess, gave up. And I think that it was weird because it said on the window, because they kind of wrote the problem, it just said rear main seal. And I was like, I don't know why that can't be fixed, but
that's
high mileage, it might be some other stuff. But that was, there's no small trucks like that. And you can kind of see that with that kind of thing. I think it's a market that is definitely open. And then if Ford does that, you know, if that's even relevant anymore or whatever, but I think there's definitely a market for that, or Volkswagen could do it and stuff like that, because no one does that. VW used to have the little rabbit truck too.
Yeah,
and you see those. Excuse me. You see those every once in a while, and people love them still.
Yeah, every once in a while.
Those are very rare.
No, I remember looking at one on Craigslist when I was looking for a new car. And yeah, it was like a really old, like diesel one, but it was, I believe it was a naturally aspirated diesel.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Holy crap, they were slow, but I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And like, it's not going to break probably ever, and it's just, it's really interesting. And then I was like, I was reading up about them and people who had them and the experiences that they had. And they're like, yeah, if there's a hill coming up, like on a highway, you're going to have to speed up to prepare to get over the hill. And I was like, you're joking. This can't be, it can't be that bad. And I was, you know, I don't mind buying a slow car, but that seemed just too slow to be practical anymore.
When it gets in the way of just normal driving, you're kind of like,
yeah, I don't,
you know, mind. I don't mind not, I don't mind necessarily not being able to like whip out and pass someone like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, my car's got a turbo though, so it's different. It's a much bigger diesel engine, but it's pretty good at that kind of thing, so it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have some super great straight line speed, but once you're up there, passing power is really good. But then again, that kind of goes back to, what would you import from, I would say NAFTA, but that's, you know, there's more countries than that. Canada, you know, the US, Mexico, but then you can go south of Mexico and there's even more stuff. Like Volkswagen and Brazil do a lot of their own stuff.
It's, yeah, and I believe Ford Brazil does as well. And I mean, I'd like to know how expensive it is to actually get a car from, like, South America and bring it up to the States. I know from Mexico it's probably not bad at all because it's, like, right there.
If you can do the paperwork and drive it to the border, that's probably it.
It's probably enough. And, I mean, I'm assuming that South America, it'd be cheaper than getting something from overseas, but perhaps I'm wrong. I feel like they just put it on a truck and bring it over here.
They could, yeah, they could ship it like that.
Just cross the canal and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'd be far, but I don't know if that would be cheaper. Even if you got to put it on a ship and shipped it up, it's not.
It's like just a shorter distance. I mean, especially with Texas, though, it can go like
right into it.
Yeah, into the Gulf.
Because I've looked at getting cars from Germany, and they will always come from, I think it's the North Coast, and then they go up through, like, what's that thing called between France and the UK? The Channel. So they'll go up from,
just,
isn't it like the English Channel? Or
I believe
like
it's the English
Channel. Wow, we're very good at geography.
You were like, just the Channel. And I was like, there's probably like a million channels out there.
But what I meant is, like, I think they pull it up.
I told you the Channel. I mean,
well, I don't know if they go, they can't go south out the Med because then they have to go through other countries. But if they go north, you take it up to the North Coast.
Yeah.
Put it on a ship, put it in a box, whatever you want to do. in a shipping crate, and then they take it on a boat, go all the way through, go down, and then they can come into the Gulf, because I know a big port of entry is Galveston, and it's actually, there's a lot of companies I've noticed in my research, like, trying to set this up, is, like, they kind of use that port only, and that'd be, like, their only port, is they just only go through Galveston. I think you can go through a couple other ones. There's another one, like, more up the coast towards, like, Louisiana, but that's further away from DFW, so, like, I wouldn't do that. But, yeah. And then that's another thing. I don't know when the flight restrictions are going to be, like, raised, but yeah. Anything I was supposed to go to Germany this summer, that's not happening anymore, unless I just go on my own and not get class credit or whatever. But I think now if I can, depending on how cheap the tickets are, maybe I'll reserve a ticket and then just go for, like, a month or something near the end of the year and just bring back a car.
That'd be pretty cool.
Just because, like, why not at this point?
I mean, I know I was talking to you about it, and I was like, if you can make it happen, I'd love for you to bring back a lot of, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that'd be great, because I would love to have a lot of...
I don't know why the lot... I just keep coming back to it.
But the Niva, the sedan, the, like, the 124 Fiat one, right? Yeah, just the lot of... When you think of the company, that's what you go to, yeah, right?
I mean, I could... I'd probably prefer, like, the older ones that were closer to the 124.
The ones that look kind of, like, pretty compared to...
Yeah, they look a little nicer.
Yeah.
In my opinion. But yeah, like, the later ones are great, too. I mean, they're pretty much the same car, but... You know, the early ones had, like, the circular headlamps.
Yeah, they looked
nice. But the
later
ones had, like, rectangular... But, I mean, they're all cool, personally.
I kind of almost want to import a Riva, the little SUV thing.
The SUVs are really cool. Yeah. I hear they're real troopers off-road, too.
Yeah, like, I've heard they're actually really good. And then now, I love just, like, you go to Lada's website, and that thing is still being made. And they haven't changed anything, but you can get a four-door one now, which is, like, longer, because they're taking on, I guess, the Wrangler with that.
Oh, yeah.
But I just must imagine, like, it must be so cheap to make comparatively that, like, you know, it's absolutely worth it. But those things are cool. Or a Tatra. That but I don't know what... That's going to be more
they're
money, and that's
going to
be... Yeah, they're pricier. I was just thinking of, like, cheap, random shit to import, because here's the thing. It's, like, really, regardless of what you import, if it's not on the roads here, you will find someone who is willing to pay... Not necessarily, like, a high premium on it, but you can make money on it, just even if it's a little bit to pay yourself back and get some profit over it.
Because,
like, I really want a Renault Twingo. I don't know why. I just do. And, like, why not?
It's hilarious.
It's a great little car, even though it's, like, a 1.3 liter, maybe 1.2 something. Yeah. I don't even remember anymore, but they're hilarious. And that'd be... I'd love to drive around here in that, because people go, what is that? Why is that man driving around in a car smaller than a smart car?
Yeah, I've seen, like, cars on Craigslist that have been... They're just import cars, but there's something similar to what you could get here. Or I don't know what the Cressida was called in Japan, and I'm sure the Japanese one is, like, so much better, but they go for, like, more premium than they do. You know, they're more expensive than a Cressida one. It's really similar.
I know you can get a car over there called the Chaser, which is, I think, it's, like, either a Crown or it's a Cressida or whatever, but it's the same basic car, because I remember watching an old episode when I was growing up, like, Mighty Car Mods. I don't even know if you know that channel. It's these Australian guys, because their import laws are completely different. They're allowed to bring newer stuff over, but they basically cut one in half and then put it in a shipping crate and then took it, because it had a... I think it was a 1JZ, like, or 2JZ, one of the GTE turbo ones, and then they put that in a Cressida and made, like, a really cool sleeper kind of car.
Yeah.
That was cool. Like, I like stuff like that, because that's something that, again, you don't see everywhere. Or, like, a Ute and stuff like that, because I would really like one of those... insane Holden Utes, or even just
those would be so cool.
Even just the Commodore,
yeah,
because I've made a long time ago this whole printout and price, like, dissection of what I would do, because the Cadillac Catera is the same car. It's Holden.
Yes, the Catera.
Yeah, the Cadillac Catera, if you look at it on paper, it's shit. Like, it's just a Vauxhall, I don't even remember, and a Holden, I believe it's a Holden, like, Commodore in England, or, well, not England, in Australia, but I don't remember what it's called in continental Europe. Nonetheless, like, it's such a boring car, but you look at it, you can actually, you know, replace body panels and do stuff like that. It is, you could make it look very good and then put the V8 in it, but the thing is, it's, honestly, by the time you've done all that work, and now that we're kind of getting into this time where it's, like, some very cool cars that came out in the mid to late 90s are being legalized and stuff like that, you might as well just go get one and pick it up and have an older one and stuff like that.
That reminds me, for those that don't know, the Pontiac GTO was essentially a Holden Venero that they brought over here. And this one, I've not actually seen someone do this before. Maybe I didn't look hard enough. But this, I see this posting on OfferUp for a Pontiac GTO, but it's got all the Holden badges on
it. That's cool.
And it's got the Holden front on it. And man, it looks a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, it still doesn't look amazing because it still looks like...
It's just a blob.
It's yeah, it's very much a blob car. But
they're cool though.
That makes it a lot more interesting to me.
That's
that's sweet. And he actually he's got the CV8 badge, and then he's got also he replaced a steering wheel.
Oh wow! At least
the plastic cover. And I'm like, nice.
So it says Holden. That's really cool. I like that.
I know. I love stuff like that.
It's like the people who put. I mean, I even did that because I was like, I want to make my Genesis Coupe look like the Korean version, which literally has these big, huge wing badges and stuff like that, even though here it just has a little circle in the H. But the stuff like that I like a lot. And then I really like when people take the new SS, the like one that, if you look at it, you go, it's a Malibu.
Yeah.
Which is kind of good and bad. It's good because hella sleeper, and it's got a big, you know, huge like 6.2 V8 and manual, and it's a great car to drive. But then, you know, you might want to be taken a bit more like, ooh, it's something cooler. But what I've seen a lot of people do, and there was a guy here, I think he went to the same car meet as me. It was a while ago, but he replaced all the badges with the Holden ones.
Yeah.
And it looked great. Like, it was really good looking.
No, I love that kind of stuff. And maybe it's weird of us to be like, because those are kind of normal over there, right?
Yeah.
It's just and so it's weird of us to be like, oh, we see that here, and we're like, awesome, that's super sweet. But it really is, because it's different from everything else on the road. It makes you, like, look twice at it. And it's essentially a car from another land that you have here now.
Yeah.
Without actually having to import a car.
And then you can also always have the thing, which I think is funny, of people who aren't, like, super knowledgeable about cars, they just go, what is that? Like, what is that thing? Yeah. My favorite is, in high school, it's not really a story or anything, but my I had the wing badges on my Gen Coupe. I did it to both of them. Actually, no, my first one came with it. Mm-hmm. So it says Genesis on it. There are no Hyundai badges on the car, apart from the wheel, I think, on that car.
Yeah.
But anyway, typical like high school random crap. But you had to pay for parking.
Mm-hmm.
I had a parking pass. But then one day they said, hey, they're blocking off all the entrances and checking you as you come in to make sure.
Yeah.
So I get there. And then, you know, I roll past one dude. He's like, yeah, where's your ticket? I point to it. He's like, yeah, it's not there. Go talk to, like, the vice principal or whatever. So I drive over. And then she's like, where is it? I'm like, it's over there. She's like, okay. And then she gets on the radio to, like, let me through. She's like, can you let through the, what kind of car is this? And I was like, it's a Genesis. Like, not really, like, flexing. I was just really annoyed the whole morning. And I didn't think that that was going to be a thing. I was like, it's a Hyundai. Like, duh. And she was like, the Genesis, and then I was pissed off at this point, so I think I just like drifted past both of them. It was fine, but that's just like me as a high schooler, just like a little dickhead. But I've never had anything like that. It's just like, I wonder if like cops have issues with that, but I don't think enough people do it for it to be a problem.
Change, and like, badges and stuff.
I think most police officers are somewhat knowledgeable.
Like, yeah, hopefully they are. I would like to think they have a class for like identifying like common makes and models of vehicles.
Yeah,
so when
must.
Somebody say like, oh, he's running away in a Honda or whatever, you know, they're like, oh yeah, I know what that looks like, even if the badges have been peeled off.
Yeah, exactly. Or you know. My favorite is there's that screen grab. I don't know if I've showed you it, but it's, I don't remember if it's real or not, but it's hilarious. And there's a photo of like a Honda Del Sol, like, halfway out of shot, and then the caption just says, yeah, roger that. Yeah, definitely, the Supra's taken off. And it's just the ass end of a Del Sol, and I was like, I like that.
Fucking Del Sol. I swear, every Del Sol I've seen is just red.
They're so messed up, and it sucks, because they're honestly really cool cars.
They're interesting. It's kind of like a Miata, but front-wheel drive. You
know? I wish we had
It's the closest thing you can get a Miata. A front-wheel drive Miata, I'd say.
I was going to say it's the closest thing Honda made, but then I forgot about the S2000, so I'll shut up about that.
Well, yeah, but, like, the S2000 made more power.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah, but, like, to a front-wheel drive Miata.
The Del Sol was supposed to be, it really was, like, the replacement for the CRX, the little, like, coupe thing.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, we'll make it a Targa top to compete with Miata. Okay. What I wish we got in the U.S., which we never did, though, is you know how it's got the Targa roof that you, like, pop off and, like, stick in the trunk? Is like, they had an electric one. Have I ever showed you that?
Really?
So basically, if you haven't seen it, those listening, is the Honda Del Sol, it's this little, like, if you haven't seen the car, which I hope you have, but you see them around sometimes, it's basically a little, like, two-door, two-seater coupe, but it has a Targa roof, which, like, a lot of cars like that have. The new Corvette, that's, like, a staple of it now. So basically, it's, you know, a section that removes. It's not T-tops, it's one big P. So you normally you pick it up, undo latches, you pick it up yourself, put it in the trunk or the kind of area they set you to put it in. But in Japan, basically you push a button and then up out of the rear kind of trunk cover, the whole thing pivots up and it's just like a big stick comes out from the middle and it pushes up this flat piece, which is basically the trunk lid.
Mm-hmm.
Then the roof itself pivots, like it's connected at the front edge.
Yeah.
Like at the top of the windshield, it pivots up on that. And then a little arm comes out from that big flat piece that raises up, grabs it, sucks it back into that trunk piece, and then the whole thing goes back down flat.
What?
It's amazing. It's something that I never
On the Del Sol?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Why didn't we get that here?
Because no one would pay for that.
I mean, that's true. That's super extra.
That's really cool, though, because it's like a... It's such a... I don't know why, but it's like such a Japanese way of solving that problem to me. It's like, it's very like simple in like idea, but it works flawlessly, even though you don't think it would.
I found a video of this. I just have to watch this. We'll do a little live reaction right here.
Yeah, we'll see if we can link this into the thing.
Okay. Already, like, ridiculous. There's basically like an elevator.
Yeah.
Dude, this is...
Pivots on the front, a little arm comes out. It picks it up.
No.
Like man. A little forklift.
It's like a forklift. Yeah.
He makes
Does he have to help it?
I think he forgot to unlatch it.
Oh, okay.
This video, this guy.
Wow, his bad, I guess.
Then it takes it.
Oh, there it goes.
Sucks it in.
What the fuck?
It sucks it into like a little envelope underneath the trunk lid. And That's then the whole hilarious. Trunk lid goes right back down.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's really cool, though.
I didn't know you never heard of that.
I've never heard of that. Like, what's like a cooler convertible mechanism than that?
I don't know, because like as cool as the whole, you know, the metal folding roofs, they're great. I mean, the way they like, my aunt's four series is insane. I showed you it.
It is really crazy.
So BMW,
it's like a transformer.
Yeah, it you know, it's like a normal metal roof where it's, you know, it all kind of comes up in three pieces and it's like flat pack furniture. It's like something from IKEA. It goes into the trunk and then the trunk lid closes. But BMW's like kind of really extra in some random ways. So if you have the roof folded back and it's in the trunk, so if the roof is in the trunk of the car, which is where it's normally stored and stuff like that, you normally have a little partition you have to fold out so that it allows space for the roof, and then you can only fit a certain amount of luggage in there. However, on the BMW, you can put that partition out and put luggage in there and it'll still fit. But the problem is with the partition down and the roof in, you can't then get to it.
Yeah.
So you go, oh, what's the solution to that? Just put the roof back up.
Uh-huh.
No. On BMW, you open the trunk and you push a little button and the entire cassette and trunk and everything raise up like a foot straight up, and then you can get your luggage out and it all comes back down.
Genius.
It's amazing. Did I show you that? I don't remember.
I think you did while we were there.
The most,
or at least you described it.
Bonkers, like, that's cool, right?
Yeah.
That's cooler, though, that Del Sol. I don't know why. That's like such
it's unique, is the thing.
It's almost like...
Because it's a separate, like, that part, it's a part, and then it, like, folds together.
But yes.
It's not, like, a separate piece.
It's this all thing, connect,
it's
conjoined.
Grabbing.
Yeah.
It's with a little robot arm.
Yeah.
It's grabbing the roof and sucking it into itself.
Yes.
And going down. And then this is it going back, and it just spits it back out again, places it down.
Yeah, it places it down, like a little robot, forklift thing. You undo the latch. And
super
it slides
great,
back
like,
away, then it flattens out on the roof automatically.
My God.
And then the little trunk, you know, shelf or whatever you want to call it, envelope thing, just slides back in. And then you latch your roof down.
Insanity.
It's a problem. It's a solution to a problem that really wasn't a problem, but I like it.
Because, like, with a Targa top, it's one person can kind of
take
it off.
Yeah, normally you can just pick
it up. It's not that big of a deal. Actually, it might even be faster because this mechanism's not that quick.
No.
You could probably, like, if you were in a rush, just, like, grab it and put it in the trunk faster than it does it. But, I mean, my God, that's a flex right there.
Yes.
If I've ever seen
it. If you roll up at the lights and do that kind of thing,
it'd
be amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Speaking of which, like, just of, like, cool little weird features, Donut put out this video. They found this, like, super-duper low-mileage RX-7, a second generation.
Yeah.
And it had flip-up headlights, right? But I've seen this in the Miata. If you have flip-up headlights and it's a daytime and you want to flash your lights, for the Miata, what it does is you do it, And then, you know, you have to wait for them to pop up, which is honestly pretty fast. It's not that big of a deal. But you wait for them to pop up, and then you flash. And then when you're done flashing, they eventually, like, go back down.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But for this car, they had little little windows. So the... I think it doesn't, like, flip, like, straight down like this, but it, like, rotates like that. I don't know. It's weird. It... On audio, it's not going to make any fucking sense.
Yeah, but I've never seen this. That's cool, though.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And so it'll, and so, but when they're down, there's this little window. It's like just a little slit. And when you flash your lights, it'll just shine through that slit, and it's like enough, right?
I've seen that on those cars, though, and I wondered what that was for.
Yeah, and you're like, what the hell is that?
I thought it was just a vent.
Yeah, it's... Okay, here we go. Okay, yeah, there it is. There's that little window. Headlight windows. I just want to see it flash.
We'll link some of these videos whatever.
There it is, and you can see the light.
Oh, wow. I like that's a very
it's just a,
interesting way of designing that.
Yeah, there it is.
That's cool.
It's just flashing through it.
That's really cool. I didn't know. I thought they were just marker lights.
Yeah, I don't... I really honestly, like... I never noticed them. No. I just like... But now looking at it, I'm like, yeah, those always were there. And yeah, they're just for...
That's
just
cool.
For flashing.
It's one of those things, like, you just... It's one of those random facts you wouldn't know unless you owned it. Like the wiper. Exactly. Or the wipers on the Dodge Viper. Which, again, yeah. I'll put an Instagram post. Just go look at that. But, like, for all this random stuff we're talking about. But it's like, they fight each other. It's not like, you know, the old minivan or a lot of cars now have it with the big windows. It's, you know, this sort of both arms come up and they're hinged at the corners of the windshield. It's not like that. They're, like, in the middle of the windshield almost, and then they wipe all the way out, and then they come back.
They're like, I don't even know if I'd say it. They're like at like quarter points in the windshield.
Yeah, it's not a...
And so then it goes like...
It goes, the driver one comes up, then the passenger one comes up, then the driver one goes down, and then they flip, and then the driver one goes back down over the top of it. It doesn't make any sense. It's just one of those
weird, yeah.
Weird, like, niche things that, again, like, you wouldn't know.
Say, like, a little sprinkle of water gets on your windshield, and you're like, I don't want to drive with that on. You know, it's just cleared up. And then it's, like, this crazy multi-step affair to just get it off.
Yes.
No, but that's exactly what it's like every time. I don't know what generations of Viper had it, but...
I think it was the first and second or something. Yeah. I don't know. Probably like that. But again, on a side note, I really like that generation of RX-7. I like the FD. Or, the main one. The like, round 90s one that looked like a Miata. I like those a lot, but I do like that kind of 80s, more square one, too. Yeah. The original one's great, but I think that middle one's got something to it, because I don't think a lot of people have it. Or just because I watched Initial D once, and I thought it was cool. Yeah.
I mean, I think all generations of RX-7 are cool in their own way.
Yes.
The first generation, really light, really, like, kind of Miata-esque because it's so light. And this was, I mean, they created it before they were making the Miata.
Mm-hmm.
And then the looks are, like, it just looks different from mostly anything you'll see on the road, which I think is really neat. That second generation, they pointed out in the video, it looks like a 944.
It does.
And it really does. I never connected that in my mind, but now knowing that information, I'm like, this is a 944, but it's, like,
it's Mazda's rotary version. And it's different and stuff like that.
But the second generation is really cool. They tried to make it more, like, comfortable and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's still plenty of capable sports cars. And then that last one was, like, magnum opus to, like, the, you know, rotary thing.
Yes.
Like, the twin turbo, like, crazy.
It's crazy.
Stuff, yeah. So, and I think that last one looks really cool. I just like the dimensions of it. The fact that it's all, like, rounded and stuff doesn't do it, you know, that's probably not the best, like, aesthetic feature of it, but I just like the general proportions and shape.
Yeah, they look really good, and they kind of started to look on. They looked their own way.
Yeah,
it wasn't just like obviously like a 944 kind of, you know, Japan going, oh, sports car, make it look like this and whatever.
I just don't know anything that looks like that first generation, and I don't know much that looks like that last generation, except for probably like that era of Corvette with the flip ups.
Yeah,
that like last era with the flip ups. I think that looks pretty similar.
Yeah.
But I don't know which one came first in that scenario.
I'm not sure, yeah.
To me, the RX-7 still looks unique.
It does look, yeah, it's unique.
I don't know what
that
about
it's different.
It, but...
And then I didn't really pick up on it, but you know the old, like, the original Z car, like the 280 and, like, the Z, there's a loud V8 rumbling by as I talk about this. But anyway, the original Z car is, if you look at it, it was Japan's answer to the E-Type Jag.
Oh. Okay.
Which, yeah, they're different, it. But you can see kind of what they're going for. And I didn't realize that until I watched some old video of these. It was like a, you know, comparison road test when it came out. And they go, well, you know, this is like an E-type Jag, but, you know, it works. It starts every day, stuff like that. Thanks, Jags.
Yeah, that's cool.
As you know, are bad about. But yeah, they were comparing it. I was like, I didn't really realize that that was kind of what they were going for. But if you look at it, you can kind of see, yeah it's you know, 2+2, big long hood, semi-powerful engine, you know, X amount of cylinders, whatever. And it was the same kind of thing. And I thought that was really cool. I'm also trying to think now, is there anything like weirdness in cars that like I've owned or you've owned where you're like, oh, you wouldn't know that unless you owned it? And I kind of remember this thing now where I had a lot of those like turn of like the millennium, like late 90s, early 2000s generations BMWs, which is like, I think it's one of their heydays. I really like a lot of their cars from that era.
Definitely, yeah.
But there was a thing where, you know, nowadays all like turn signals in cars, they're not really relays. It's all electronic, you know, yes, and the noise is synthetic and stuff like that. So as far as I know, this car was still in that era where it's kind of in between the two. I imagine there's still a relay in there in some way, shape, or form. But if you put the turn signal down, and I'm sure you notice, you know, on most cars, you know, you put it down, and as soon as you turn it off, it's off, even if it's in the middle of a flash. BMWs don't do that. They finish every single flash.
Okay.
Which means if you just touch the sort of stick down, it's like it was before the whole, you know, three click, like easy, you know, quick turn thing. But if you just touch it down, it would only flash once, but it would flash the full way, which means if you just sat there and like spammed the stick and went like click 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 click, it would just stay on solid.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
weird. Because it's like a weird thing that I forgot existed.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, in, like, the mildest way.
I know, it's, like, not really interesting. I just thought, like, I was like, that's kind of stupid. Like, that's a thing, but
it's just how they choose to do it, but that is, like, a...
That's not as cool as the roof, though. I don't have anything interesting as the roof. That roof
is pretty crazy.
Maybe something interesting, apparently, if you bought, like, the really fast E46 3 Series on the earlier ones, and it was in a rusty climate, the rear subframe would rip itself out of the trunk floor. That's interesting.
That's pretty cool. I hear that I don't know what generation, I think it was M3, I think it was an M3, it might have been E46 M3 or E36, I'm not sure, but they had like, and I think this, maybe I'm totally off base, it was a completely different car, but it had on the rev gauge, when it was cold and you were driving it, there was like basically the red line would increase.
Yes, no, they do have that, they still do that now.
Really?
Yeah, because it started with, I don't know about the E36, because that one's a pretty old one.
Okay.
Like technology wise. But I know the 46 had it, the E39 M5 had it because it was lights. It was these LED lights.
Yes,
and
yes,
it would be all the way up at, you know, 4,500 RPM or something. Yeah. And then as the car warmed up, you'd get your full red line. On the ones after it, they kind of started doing this thing where it wasn't lights, but it was like this actual, there was actually a channel around each of the rev counter and the speedometer where a little line or something could whip around. Cool. So when you set your cruise control, like on the speedometer side, a little white dot would jump out of the corner of the speedometer and go to where you had it set, and then when you turn it off, it would jump away and hide.
That's interesting.
And then the rev counter was the same thing; it would like crawl up the side and then slowly like notch its way down as it warmed up. New ones, it's all digital, so it's the same kind of thing. But yeah, they still do that kind of stuff.
But I mean, I was surprised to see in the 46 they made that much of an effort.
Yeah,
and it's interesting, and it's like, you know, make sure that maybe like people who don't know cars that well don't like slowly ruin the engine by taking it to redline right when they start it up.
Yeah, because I mean they're really high tolerance stuff engines.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like a 3 liter that made 330 horsepower, which is, I mean,
that's really good.
That's really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, because we looked at the Cigaris a couple weeks ago, and that was the highest output for like that kind of engine, naturally aspirated, whatever.
Naturally aspirated.
I think the S54 or whatever it was in the E46 was
the
one that held it for a super long time.
Yeah.
Because they really like did some work on that engine. And I think weirdly they're actually pretty reliable.
That's cool.
A lot of cars from that era do last a long time. The Bangle era, this is just me talking about BMWs now, but the Bangle era, which is the one where he was their designer. Mm-hmm. It was the E60, if you know BMWs, which is 04 to 12 or something, like 5 series, that really ugly 7 series, which I don't remember the E code for that, and then the E90, and then 91, 92, 93, depending on your variant.
Yeah.
All those. They called it the Bangle era, because he was their designer, like I said, but they all had these, what they called the Bangle butt, which is that weird trunk line that a lot of them had, where it kind of stuck out,
like,
and was just
and like
flat on the top. Yeah. So you can normally see those by then, but a lot of those, they kind of got cheap and some were unreliable. Yeah. A lot of people say, well, the specialists I used to take my car to when something I wanted to do or could do was, like, out of my expertise range, he was like, just don't buy any of those.
Don't buy the Bengal.
Yeah, and then apparently if you get the M cars, they weren't reliable. Yeah. Not like, I mean, I understand, it's a BMW, it's a bit more finicky, they do a lot of stuff that's, like, kind of on the edge of tech, which means it's new stuff, which means when other cars get it, it's reliable, but you can kind of have problems later down the line. They had a lot of issues with, like, variable valve timing when they came out with that, stuff like that, but if you work past that and just keep your maintenance up, it's fine. But the problem with, like, the V10 M5 is it would just do stuff like, I think, unless I'm getting it mixed up with another engine, I think the, like, the camshafts would just snap or something like that, and then the engine would eat itself to pieces. Okay, the thing is, I know that was also an issue with the Taurus Show V8. I don't know why that's in the back of my head, so I might be getting the two conflated.
I've heard about that with the show where, like, water would collect in a certain place.
And then it would, like, rust and then corrode, and then people, apparently what they were doing is just filling them with metal and then making them solid or fixing them so they didn't move on the show.
Okay.
The V8 one. But yeah, that era, the V8 M3 and the V10 M5, like, well, always apparently. It's one of those things where it's like, no matter what you do, it will always have this issue, and you just really can't get away from it. And then if you shell an engine, it's like a $30,000 engine.
Yeah.
So the car kind of goes with it.
That's crazy, because like the V10 M5 or the V10 M5 and M6. I mean, those are like a almost legendary status.
I think that
V10 engine's really cool.
Yes.
The only time they did a V10, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sounds amazing. They're really fast, and like, I think those are really cool. And maybe they're at such a legendary status because they do break.
They do break, and no one has them.
It's just like a precious little jewel that you have to take care of. And maybe they wouldn't be so I still think they would.
I do too. I just think it's funny how the V12s are more reliable because it's just two of their straight sixes they weld together.
They know how to do that.
Yeah, they've been doing that since the 30s. Like,
once we get in multiples of five, a little uncomfortable. Yeah.
I just remember they also made, this isn't really car news, but I think it was cool that BMW, I follow BMW Classic, which is one of their social media outlets that they do from their corporate division, but they post, like, kind of old BMWs and stuff, and it's weird, first of all, seeing that an E46 is now a classic car, because I had cars from that era, and I was like, these are fairly new, they're modern, but now they're so old, stuff like that. But anyway, they did a one-off of the E32 7 Series, which is, like 88 to 94, I want to say. It was like kind of that era.
Mm-hmm.
I really like those too. I just like how they're designed. But they had a V16.
What?
They made a one-off. It was called the Goldfish because they couldn't put cooling in the front. So it had radiators in the back and it had these big gills on the side.
Wait, I have to look this up.
Just put BMW E32, like Goldfish. I think it was a 767 Li. It was a big, big, big V16.
What the? Fuck you.
Yeah.
What?
It's different.
That is different.
Yeah. It's cool. It was a manual, too, and all this stuff, and they were trying it out, and then they ended up not doing it.
That engine bay looks insane.
Yeah.
I've never seen, like, every square inch filled with engine. That is every square inch filled with engine. Yes. Not, like, airbox, not, like, we got... No. I don't even know where the brake booster is. It's just...
Engine. It's so shoehorned in there. Because I imagine being that, I don't know if they would make a like bespoke V16, but they do make V8s. So instead of doing two sixes, like I'm doing hand motions, this isn't great, but instead of like doing two sixes like angled towards each other at the bottom, I think it's just two V8s stuck on the back of each other.
Okay.
But I don't know if that works out displacement wise, but I assume that's what they did.
I really don't know. I don't know.
6.7 liters, they might bore some stuff out.
I've seen some V16s done, I believe I've seen them actually only as like diesels mainly, for like generator engines, and they are like V8s like put together like that, at the crankshaft, like end to end.
Yeah.
But they usually have like this weird like little gap between like the first four.
Oh, you can tell. It's not just one.
And you can kind of tell that it's, or at least I remember, I don't know, this is very anecdotal because I remember seeing it one time on some page on the internet.
Yeah.
But here it looks like solid all the way through.
Yeah.
Maybe they just did a better job.
They might have done. I mean, the V12.
After all.
Yeah, like, well, the thing is, I also don't know this, but as you know, they acquired Rolls-Royce in the 90s or whatever it was, and then, or maybe it was the early 2000s, and then that's when we saw that brand new Phantom, and they really changed the brand and really made it kind of back to what I think it, you know, used to be in its heyday. It's, mm-hmm. I think they'd make some really cool stuff. But now, this is also kind of anecdotal. From what I remember, when they did that V16, it was more of a technical exercise.
Yeah.
Obviously, it didn't make it in production, but it was very cool. But I believe they took that same idea, and whenever the Phantom came out, it was supposed to have a V16 and be really, like, even more over the top.
Yeah.
And they actually made these engines. They developed them. They had cars with them, but they never put them on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they ended up doing is just putting, like, their V12 from their 7 Series, you know, with different displacement stuff, you know, 6 3/4 liters, trying to make it, which is actually the same size as that. So I don't know how uh-huh. they're related, but if at all. But, you know, that's the kind of Rolls-Royce standard size for an engine. But anyway, they just went with the V12s. However, I do know that it was a Rowan Atkinson movie. It was one of those.
Yeah.
I remember I heard a story a long time ago where it had a Phantom in it. It was like the hero car. Okay. I don't know if I ever saw the film, but I remember it.
Johnny English was
it. It might have been Johnny English. I think it was. It was one of those. And it was one of his films with that. I think it was for the newest one at the time. This is a while ago, like I said, like 10 years ago. But they got the Phantom from BMW, and then he's into cars. Like, he has a McLaren F1.
Yeah.
Or I think he had. I think he might have crashed it, but he crashed it, which sucks. But, like, he's, like, into cars, and I think he knew about this story, and he said, hey, can you, for the film, you know, we want a bespoke one, could you give us a Phantom with that engine? And they said yes.
What?
So, apparently, I don't know how they featured it in the film. I never saw it, but that car does.
For a film?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Because to me, it's like for cars that are in movies, you don't have to get, like, the one with the big engine.
No.
You just have to make it look like it does, and then you'll put in the sound afterwards.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It doesn't matter. But he wanted, like, maybe there's a shot where they, like, open up the
I don't know. See, that's
crazy.
The thing. I don't know if there was in the script, but
I'll search that.
I don't know. It was Johnny English. Johnny, I don't remember what English film it was. I remember Phantom. I saw some of the older ones when I was a kid, but I remember, I never saw this one, I don't think. But I just like that story.
Whoa.
And also, the thing is, though, you know how you're like, oh...
You're correct.
It is true?
Holy shit.
It is true? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Okay. The first Johnny English movie made in 2002, The Hero played by Rowan, for the new film released in 2011, he is upgraded to a Rolls-Royce Phantom Coupe, not just the regular V12 Coupe, but one powered by a 9-liter V16 engine.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And the thing is, I know you were just saying, like, oh, well, why would they do this, you know... They normally just make movie cars, but the thing is that engine was fully developed and tested. So if it fits, like, the car was made to have it, and it's, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to just put a different, like, you know, spin on the ECU or change the computer stuff. But, you know, if you've got it, why not do it? And I think it's pretty cool that BMW did that.
Oh yeah, they're definitely they're showing the engine in the movie.
We're looking at clips of it right now because I haven't seen this film. But
so yeah, they show the engine in the movie, which, I mean, they fucking better if they're asking specifically for a V6, a super rare V16 one.
Yeah,
that's wild. And okay, so this V16 that I have pulled up right here is the Devil 16 for the weird, like, Devil supercar.
Yeah,
I don't know how you I don't know how you pronounce it.
Yeah,
but if you can see, like, there is a gap.
Oh, there is a gap
between the first 8 and the second 8. That's kind of what I expected to see, although it seems like on that BMW it didn't look like it had one. I don't know how
they might just hide it well, too.
Yeah,
it may not even be two V8 stuck together. It could be bespoke, like I said. I'm not sure. Because if that is... The displacement's way more on that newer engine, so I thought it was the same size. But if they were doing a 9-liter thing, then obviously that's different. But, you know, they did obviously, like, I'm assuming, kind of develop some of the technology to do that in the 90s, whenever that car was built. But that thing's really cool, and I don't know, there's not a lot of that around. However, I do want to say now that if they can do that for that movie, I don't know if they've developed anything for one of the newer Phantoms, but if I have the money, I'm gonna ask. I'm gonna hey put a V16 in it, because I want it.
That'd be great.
Like, aside from the other insane bespoke stuff they do to Rolls-Royce, but
I see, like, this is it's a Cadillac one, and there's actually two, this is an old V16, but there's two, like, valve covers.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, because that's the easiest way to do it. If you've got it, just go 16 cylinders.
Smoke them if you got them, you know? Like, if you got V8s, and it's easy to just put them together, you know? I don't see why not. Because I'm thinking making it a bespoke, like, complete one-off one's got to be hard.
And expensive.
Because the crankshaft on that?
Yeah.
Think how crazy looking that thing must be.
Especially if it's, like, single piece forged out of...
Oh, God.
It'd be miles long.
Yeah,
it'd be like 6 feet long.
The cast would be huge.
Yeah.
No, that would be insane. I wonder how they do the balancing on that, because I know V8s are either they're flat plane, or yeah, they're like cross plane.
Yeah.
And cross plane's like way more popular for larger displacement V8s. I wonder if they do two cross plane or two flat plane. I wonder how that engine balances.
Yeah, because I don't know, because it's one of those things where, you know, V8s are naturally imbalanced, right?
Yeah.
And
that's because inline fours are naturally imbalanced. They have a secondary.
That's why I say you put them together.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily cancel it out. But then the thing is, with like straight sixes, they are. So you put two of those together, it's even smoother.
Yeah, yeah. The V12s,
so I'm wondering if
V12s and V6s, or V12s and straight sixes, are some of the most balanced engines.
Yeah. So I'm wondering what that does for a V16. I wonder if it's almost one of those things where maybe they didn't put it in the Rolls Royce because it wasn't smooth enough, or something insane like that.
I do wonder, because if an inline eight is
actually, I don't even know if an inline 8 is smooth or not.
Yeah, if that's perfectly balanced.
Anymore.
Well, yeah, I don't.
They did a long time ago.
Really?
I think it's probably a Cadillac and stuff like that in the 30s and
that's
40s.
That's a bizarre engine.
You know how cars were shaped. It was just this, like, tube in the middle, and they put a big engine in it, and they go from there. But
yeah, that's true. But, like, if inline 8s are naturally balanced, then I don't see a reason why V16 would not be just naturally balanced. I say naturally because there's a lot of things they can do now to make them more balanced,
yeah,
with like rotating shafts and all
and stuff
this
like that.
Engineering mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
It's a lot.
But yeah, there's a lot to it. But yeah, that's one of the reasons inline fours don't get that big, is because the bigger they get, the more this, like, I think it's the secondary imbalance.
Yeah.
The more that becomes a problem, and the rougher they get.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and the biggest inline four I know of is like the 3.9 diesel 4BT, but that barely revs at all, so
it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't shake. Because I was gonna say, my mother had a Hyundai with like a 2.4, and I thought that was pretty big.
Yeah, that's about as big as they get, like a 2.4, 2.5. It's rare to find them outside.
I don't think, because I was gonna say the BMW engine I had, my E46 was a 2.5, and it was a straight six, and
yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
ooh, that's a big engine. But it's like displacement is displacement. Like, who cares?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, I don't think they would dare rev out like a 2.4 or 2.5, like really high.
No.
Without it like coming apart.
Yeah, or just being uncomfortable.
I really don't know. I know the inline fours that were in the 944s, and like those were, they got pretty big.
Yeah.
I think I remember. Let me look it up. I'm looking up so much stuff right now. Straight aided engine. Let's start with that. Oh, it looks like they're just old 1920s, 1930s.
Yeah, that's real old.
Yeah, that's not going to be in anything that we can recognize.
No.
Okay. 944 in line. Yeah, 2.5.
That's
2.7.
Wow, really?
Wait, 3 liters?
It's got to be bigger
than
4.
That's got to be like a special edition something.
Is it a 4-cylinder?
944. It's a 4-cylinder. What the hell? 944 S2 made 211 horsepower. It's a 3-liter inline 4.
Wow.
That's insane.
I didn't know that.
Okay, it says 944 S2. Perhaps this is like a special model.
No, I know they exist. I know it's like a fairly, I mean, it's a special edition of it, but I know it was super rare. I know they're hard to find, but it doesn't mean like they're impossible to find.
I wonder how they feel when you're inside. Is it really shaky? Is it like pretty good?
That's
a good
question.
Porsche, I feel like they would do a pretty
good. Porsche, I would hope, would do enough to do that, but anyway. All right, we're probably going to wrap it up there.
Okay.
So thank you for listening us to our engine size and like whatever comparisons we were just making there. But yeah, we're going to see what we can do in this current virus-ridden climate. You know, don't worry about the pandemic outside. Coming up with some new media stuff. We'll try to keep you in the loop, those of you listening. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Jacob.
I'm David.
And we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.
Vulnerable, vulnerable. Vulnerable.